Hello, everyone. How are you?
Hey, welcome to a leader training CD. We're really excited about this opportunity for you to jump into a specific issue to talk about some things that are going on with your students. My name is Jason Carr. I work with the student ministry with North Point.
And my name is Sarah McDonald, and I also work with the student ministry at North Point. We're going to spend some time talking about different issues, so we hope that you find this useful. Feel free to skip around, jump around to different tracks as you like.
Well, hey, today we're really excited to talk about a specific issue that chances are you have dealt with in your group or you will deal with at some point during the journey of your group. And we have two great special guests who are counselors who deal with students on a regular basis, and we're looking forward to digging into their knowledge and experience to help you on your journey as a leader. And we have Jason and Jennifer here today, and we're going to ask them to introduce themselves real quick. So here is Jason and Jennifer.
My name is Jason Otwell. I'm a therapist at the Atlanta Counseling Center down in Dunwoody. I have been in private practice for about 10 years, seeing adolescents most of that time. About half of my practice is with adolescents, and enjoy spending time trying to help them with some of the things one of the topics we'll talk about today.
Great.
And I'm Jennifer Stuckert, and similar to Jason, I've also been practicing for about 10 years now. I'm at Paraclete Counseling Center here in Alpharetta, and I also work with about half adolescents as well as other things, and particularly deal with family dynamics and things kids are struggling with.
Great.
Awesome. Well, today, we, based on feedback from our leaders and stuff that we know, just looking in culture, that 51% of people who get married get divorced, mm-hmm. supposedly. Well, I guess that's true. It's not really supposedly.
It's not supposedly. And I think it's also true that our students probably, if they are not dealing with divorce themselves, know somebody who is. Absolutely. And so we felt like just from talking to a lot of our leaders, we felt like this would be a great benefit to just kind of say, hey, how do I help a kid? What do I need to know as a leader? And so that's why we just were really excited that you guys would join us today to talk a little bit about, what we can do to help leaders, what we can do to help kids, and just kind of hear from your professional opinion.
So we're just going to get started. So the first thing that we'd like to hear from you, your perspective, is what are some signs or behaviors that would alert a small group leader that a student is struggling with his or her parents' divorce?
There's kind of two different approaches that kids take. Sometimes they withdraw completely from their present environment. So when leaders start seeing things like kids pulling away from their normal social group, when they see things like kids getting, what would appear to be more depressed, when they hear a lot of negative language coming out of their mouths, when the things that used to make them happy don't make them happy anymore, and they're not interested in their old hobbies or their old favorite music or any of those kinds of things, those are sort of some tips that things are going on in the environment.
Yeah, things that they can see.
Right. Like really practical behavioral things. Changes in right. the child's demeanor,
sure.
would be an indicator.
Absolutely. Do you guys find that when kids are coming to see you, that they're in a spot where they feel, I don't want to talk about it? Like it's just, mm-hmm. They want to push back on everybody? Or is that just something that maybe we notice because we're around students a lot?
No, I think that's very, very true. When I was looking at this issue of divorce, that was one of the things that kind of came through in all the my thoughts about it was try to get them to talk about it, because mm-hmm. that's definitely a tendency, is they're just going to want to pull inside and not talk about the struggle they're dealing with. It's such a crucial dynamic in their lives that their family is breaking apart. And so it's difficult to think about exposing that to other people, no matter who they are, no matter how much they care about you and how much they are in your life. So so I definitely think that's accurate, that they want to kind of pull in and just kind of close off and not talk to anybody.
Well, yeah,
this.
Because I think a lot of it may be that they're feeling like there's something wrong with them. I don't know.
That's definitely one of the questions they're asking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did I do?
Right.
Absolutely.
Cause this? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so you want to be, and we all do that. We all want to, whenever anything bad is going on in our life, we withdraw. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. What are some potential practical tips that you guys try to get students to come out of their shell and talk about it? If we know that one of the things they do is they try to sneak away and not talk about it, what are some questions or what are some practical things that you guys try to accomplish to build that trust for them to communicate with you about it?
Well, I think we're at a bit of an advantage mm-hmm. in that we're in kind of an artificial setting where that's kind of the expectation when they come in. Okay,
right.
I'm going to have to talk to this dude about this. But
sure.
But I think part of what I try to do is develop some sort of relationship and kind of connect in a way as quickly as possible. That way it doesn't feel so artificial, like I'm being surgeries being done, this is being ripped out of me, that it feels more kind of comfortable to talk about it. And they, as they begin to trust me and feel like I'm on their team, like I'm their advocate, I'm not their parents' advocate, I'm not anybody else's advocate, I'm on their team, then I think it makes it easier for them to open up about that kind of stuff and talk about stuff that they, that's just in their head or in their heart and they're not really telling anybody else. So I think the relational piece of it is where I focus my time, especially initially, but even throughout the time, to make sure that that stays consistent, that they feel like they can continue to be comfortable in the room and talking to me.
Which is exactly where we want our leaders to be, because
right.
they
already have that
mm-hmm. relationship.
They have an advantage over us as counselors. I mean, we have the artificial setting that they come expecting to talk, but they have the natural bond already.
Right.
And so there's just a lot of avenues to cultivate connection or to pursue new connections with that student.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, it may require a lot more one-on-one or more, smaller clusters of two kids hanging out with a leader.
Yes.
To cultivate that. They may be more willing to talk a little bit more openly with another friend there
right.
than just getting together with the leader one-on-one.
That's
so,
true.
So, looking for venues where sometimes with certain, probably with boys than
Absolutely.
Girls, but, they respond so well to activities.
Right.
Absolutely.
So talking and doing something
right.
is
Which
great
is exactly
guys.
How our ministry runs. And our leaders are used to hearing us say, if you do an outing,
right.
you are going to have an opportunity to invest in
Driving
your students,
there,
talking
whatever.
With them, hanging out. It's,
yep.
it's a natural conversational time
right.
where things just kind of happen. I had a parent tell me the other day that she has the deepest conversations with her daughter when they're driving to school.
Absolutely.
Right.
And, there's a definite beginning and end, and it's
yes.
usually a short period of time, but that's a lot of times when conversations really get started.
Absolutely.
I think
one of the things that you just said made me kind of think, Jason, that when your student trusts you and when you've developed, mm-hmm. some kind of a bond or a connection, then they're willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's something that it's so good to hear, a counselor say, hey, that's normal, that's natural, because that's exactly what we say a lot in our ministry.
Yeah.
If you are going to build a relationship, and relationships take time for us,
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
You have trust will be built over time.
Right.
So if you have got a relationship, then you get trust. Then when we get trust, then that's going to allow you to gain some influence in that life.
Exactly.
That student's life. And then hopefully for us, our goal is that not just gaining some influence, but then there's going to be an opportunity for some sort of growth or change.
Right.
So it's kind of that cyclical, kind of thing. So it's fun to hear, okay, yeah, we're on
yeah,
the same page.
You're tracking in the right direction.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
And they should also expect that at this time, when something like your family blows up, that trust is going to be the thing that all of a sudden is shattered all the more. And
right.
so
right.
some kids become exceedingly leery of everyone in mm-hmm. their lives, mm-hmm. and they back up, and mm-hmm. they go into this, no one is safe, no one is okay, my whole world is falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So a leader shouldn't be shocked if all of a sudden, a kid who they were talking to great and had this great bond with just pulls back.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to do a lot more slow building, small steps to show them that they're trustworthy.
Right.
Sure.
Doing what you say over and over and over in 100 different ways will make a real difference to a kid who's seen the basics of life be untrustworthy.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that persistence is invaluable.
Yeah.
That if you can stay in the fight with them as they even potentially relationally feel like they're fighting you to stay connected, then that has potential to reap tremendous rewards down the road. But like Jennifer's saying, with very, very small steps and incremental pieces that eventually you kind of gain that trust is – they can believe in that trust that they experienced before and can go back to dialogue.
Is there a high frustration level for you all when you're talking with a student in that spot?
Because you just have to be really patient.
Yeah.
You just have to be so patient. And usually kids get one of the goals that we have as counselors is to help the child or the student become more articulate about what it is they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So as their insight grows, then they can share more about what they're really experiencing. So it's profound for us if the student starts to be able to say, I'm struggling to trust you. I mean,
right.
we know it.
Yeah.
We go in with that.
Sure.
But if they can start to say it, and if they can say that to your leader, and if your leader can help them talk about that,
mm-hmm.
that right there is making huge progress
Absolutely.
Towards getting better.
Sure.
And in general, guys, teenage guys aren't super talkative in the first
Dude.
Place.
Right.
So
right.
this is only kind of making that a bigger issue that
it does.
They're going even more in their shell.
It does.
And this is good to hear that, if you see signs, it's a better – and you mentioned this, it's a great time to really jump in and really kind of even cement that relationship more because the importance of being there for
right.
that student,
right.
even though they might not respond, that you establish yourself as someone who's there to walk through the
journey. And they can be listening for things like, you know, kids are going to say stuff like mom and dad have been fighting more. There are going to be signs.
Right.
It may not always – this is all going to happen way before a divorce. Divorce is the end of the line, the biggest explosion.
Sure.
But there's going to be a lot of turmoil in a teenager's life way before that. Mm-hmm. Some teenagers, it's a perpetual state.
Sure.
Because their families never really have harmony.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm working with a lot of guys, Jason, you were just mentioning kind of from a guy's perspective that we don't typically do a lot of that. And I think as male leaders working with teenage boys, that it's especially important to seize those opportunities because we don't typically do that. We're looking to just, you know, let's just go out and go play basketball and see if we can reconnect and kind of hang out. Where if you're hearing I'm struggling or, you know, my stuff's going rough at home and things like that, to jump in and say, tell me more about that or what's going on or
be
to seize that opportunity,
sure.
I think is huge.
We had an outing a camp last winter. And a leader came to me and he just said, hey, I just need you to know this. This is kind of crazy. We were playing basketball this afternoon and one of our kids just hauled off and punched another kid while we were playing the game. And there was no problem between them. They were just playing the game. And this outburst kind of came. And then the kid was embarrassed. He felt so bad. It wasn't like he was lashing out and just kept going.
He lost control of himself.
He really did. He just was, you know, I can't believe I did that. And he felt guilty or whatever. So the leader pulled him aside, started talking to him, and kind of came through that, you know, my parents are in a spot where I think that they're getting to a point where they might be getting divorced and I don't know what to do. And it was crazy because those two, you know, playing basketball and your parents getting divorced don't seem related
right.
at all.
Right.
But in this young man's life, they definitely were. So that's kind of where we've been kind of seeing, you know, hearing from leaders, these kinds of strange behaviors and what do I
exactly.
do? And, you know, with girls, it's kind of the opposite. It's this need, this incessant need to talk and to be.
Right. Increased neediness.
Yes.
We might call it.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, you're kind of bringing up another big category that we sort of slipped by just in response to
Good.
This first question, which is just general rebellion increases.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that may mean, you know, you need to bear in mind substance abuse may go up, whether that's drugs or alcohol. They're looking for escapes. They may change their whole lifestyle pattern in response to this. Maybe more promiscuity, a lot of factors like that. And those may be things that you wouldn't hear as much about directly reported to you as a leader, but you might hear another student in your group come forward and say, kid told me they were doing this stuff.
Right.
Did you know it? And then it needs to be addressed.
The term that we use a lot for just seasons of life is defining moments.
Yes.
And it seems that we're learning more and more that when a student deals with divorce, it's a defining moment.
It is.
Absolutely.
Because how they choose to handle it will in many ways kind of
set a course.
Yeah. For
absolutely.
The next season of their life.
Right.
I can't think of a time that I was seeing somebody in my office that their parents divorced when they were kids that somehow it wasn't brought back up and while we were talking about it. It's absolute defining moment in their life. No matter when it happens to you, if you're 16, 22, 30, doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
It still is a huge issue in your life.
Well, because you feel, you know, that there's something to be said about, you know, people loving each other that has nothing to do with you, but everything to do with you at the same time.
Makes your stability.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, these are the people who created you.
Right.
And so that there's, you know, this love issue that you're supposed to be learning from them. And then
and
on the other
the God
side.
Model.
Right. It's the God model. And then all of a sudden it's falling apart.
Right.
And so there's definitely that fear and that inconsistency that just, you know, kind of wells up in a kid.
And then if you're a middle schooler, just to speak to that population specifically, I mean, you're hormonally, socially, everything is blowing up in your life anyway. So if the one place that's stable that you're kind of trying to challenge here and there appropriately and develop your own identity is
falling apart,
destroyed, then you are more undone than anybody.
Yes.
So they should be bearing that in mind, that middle schoolers are going to be more explosive with their response to divorce than other groups.
Sure.
What are two or three things that you see students, the biggest areas of need or the things that they seem to struggle with the most as they're processing through their parents' divorce?
Mm-hmm.
What are some specific areas that if you look, you know, from a 30,000 foot level, what are the big, like you could say,
big categories?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the ones we're talking about that I'll speak to is just kind of emotional regulation. Just managing your emotions becomes much more difficult. Just like you said, kind of foundationally, your family is falling apart and adolescents so unconsciously rely on that they don't have that foundation. Then their ability to regulate their internal world is just much more difficult. So they, you know, they get angry and slug somebody on the basketball court, which is totally out of the blue, or irritability is so common with teenagers mm-hmm. when they really haven't undergoing a lot of stress, and mm-hmm. so stuff just ticks them off all the time.
yeah,
I mean, it just does.
It does.
And I think that's true across both genders.
Right.
Again, I see it with more of the teenage boys in my mm-hmm. practice, but I'm sure that's true.
I think it kind of happens with everybody in life.
Yeah.
If you
right.
things are going on, you get irritable.
Right.
I'm
exactly.
sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. And I think some of that is it's easier to see that emotion regulation when they're acting, when they're ticked off or yelling or screaming.
Or for girls, crying outbursts.
Exactly.
You're going to see those a lot.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. I think it's the more,
a similar thing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the more hidden stuff that's also stirring in there of connecting to identity and who am I
right.
and all that kind of stuff that brings a lot of self-doubt and potential depression. It's a pretty uncomfortable things to be thinking about. So I think just regulating their emotions and kind of dealing with that, which is a natural process of adolescence in general, you throw the stress of divorce in there and it becomes much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. And I'd add some things like basic shock.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, even though we know divorce is out there, either kids are kind of always walking around afraid, is mm-hmm. my family the family that's going to happen?
Mm.
Or they just completely are blown out of the water, never saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of parents keep that somewhat hidden. You know, they might just think it's normal that our parents are fighting, and then mm-hmm. you know, a parent lands it on them, or parents make big shifts
mm-hmm.
in their whole life value system. They meet
right.
someone else. A lot of different factors flow in there. So shock is a big one
mm-hmm.
we see,
mm-hmm.
and fear.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about all the life changes that are now going to flow out of the divorce.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That starts as soon as separation starts to happen.
Absolutely.
It's a regular thing, I'm sure. Jason, you talk about this with your students too. But where are we going to live?
Yeah.
You know, mom doesn't make as much money as dad. We have to like majorly downsize into a totally different house, live in an apartment. Does that mean I have to change schools?
Right.
Then you've got parents who handle it well and parents who don't handle it well.
Right.
And the parents who don't handle it well, it makes it all the more scary and confusing. That's kind of the next big category. What's really going on? Which parent's really the good parent? Which parent's the bad parent? Are the parents even talking honorably about one another?
Mm.
Plenty
mm-hmm.
of times they're not. They're
right.
hostile. And as someone told me, you know, taking the low road
right.
about one
yeah.
another, and that, you know, trying to put kids one against, you know, against one parent or the other, mm-hmm. building alliances. And
that's an issue I know that leaders have heard a lot about.
Yes.
A student saying, my dad says this about my mom, or
right.
mom said this about dad,
right.
and I don't know it's true. And
right.
they're getting pulled in different sides,
yep.
and they're kind of using them like, like when we were kids and mom said, go ask dad, and then
yes.
right.
you're
right.
playing size to
right.
do what you wanted
absolutely.
Kind of thing.
Right.
Absolutely.
And now it's flipping, and it's the parents playing that with the kids.
Absolutely.
What are some practical things from your perspective as you hear, if you evaluate that in a student? I know that's a thing our leaders deal with a lot. They
yeah.
hear their students go, mom and dad are, and they don't know how to express it, but they
yeah.
feel this tension of mom says this and dad says this, and I don't know what's right.
Well, let me say one other thing before we jump into that. I think part of the reason that becomes something they so desperately feel is because just of the break in the relationship that before, I assumed that my parents were one unit.
Even
if they
one
were,
another.
Even if they were together, even
yeah.
if they were fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that break brings into question that there are two different people here, and I may have to align myself differently with them individually, where before I was trying to relate to them as, mm-hmm. as a unit. So
mm-hmm.
on top of that, then you know, parents acting like idiots doesn't help. But,
right.
But I think just the nature of the process calls that into question, where if you've got the most amicable parents, that issue is probably still there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not a parental unit anymore. They're two separate people that are going to be parenting you, which is very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
So then if your parents are acting like not
idiots.
The best folks,
yes.
to put it mildly, and they are, you know, putting one kid against another, one of the big realizations that a leader can help a student come to is one that's just a duh kind of statement, but that is parents are people too,
mm-hmm.
and they make mistakes.
That's
and that
wonderful,
that
yeah.
whole disillusionment that I thought my mom and dad had everything together and they really knew what was going on, even though you're rebelling against them as a teenager, you still kind of hold them up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they're going to go through that really sobering assessment of their parents, have to look at their strengths and weaknesses, maybe have to look at their, you know, moral decay,
oh,
and, you know, that was unexpected and or secret or all those kinds of things. Let's say adultery comes out and you never had any idea that one of your parents was doing this, and you're just devastated, and
right.
you know, they get afraid then about what about their own marriage and what does this mean,
right.
And on, it's
well,
like an explosion.
It unearths some questions
deep
that
ones.
Students probably are not even thinking about.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Most students are probably not thinking about money
right.
in the capacity of, do we have enough to pay
right.
this? It's just like, Mom, I need to get something.
More.
Or
right.
Yeah, I mean,
I want a new cell phone.
Right. Absolutely. And that's how they think. And so all of a sudden now they're thinking, maybe we don't have enough. That's
right.
a whole new concept for children
right.
or students, I should say. And then also, what you bring up this concept of adultery or not loving something. It's like these are issues that are adult issues that a
yes.
student probably has not even on their radar.
Right.
So now they're learning something. I mean, they're learning all this information so quickly. They're having to deal with it and process it. I mean, one of those issues is huge. You know, like your dad loses your job. Your parents are still married, dealing with the concept of finances.
Thing.
That's
right.
a huge thing. But now it's like this bond that you were saying, the parental unit is pulled apart, and now how do I adjust and how do I live? And I mean, literally a lot of grown-up questions mm-hmm. that a student is kind of facing. And I think for leaders of just being able to acknowledge it, yeah, if you've got questions, I mean, we might not be able to solve your problems, but we can just talk about
right.
it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And,
right.
A leader has the advantage of they are an adult. They've been exposed to these things before.
Right.
Even if they don't have all the answers, because you don't have to have all the answers.
Right.
Teenagers
and nobody
love
does.
It if you just will talk with them.
Oh, yeah.
So just to enter into these big debates and to have someone outside the family look with them and say, this isn't cool.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you're mom or dad's doing or both.
Right.
And, yeah, we really wish it were different than this.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about why we wish it were different and what mm-hmm. are you learning from this? And, how do you want to be a different person than your parents are being? Because
right.
the reality is we don't have to be the same people our parents are.
Right. right. Which is a humongous relief,
right.
for a student to think, I'm not going to necessarily, because we hear in so many other ways, you look just like your mom.
That's right.
You're going to turn out just like your dad, kind of a thing. And then this is a big deal. And
yep.
I don't think, anybody.
You're separating again.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
part of the whole identity formation that's going on with adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But this causes a crash. It's like a huge car crash. And, mm-hmm. You're not prepared for all the things that sequence after it.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good analogy. I don't know how much you talk about this in your practice, but from your perspective, from the outside looking in, how does it affect a student's faith as they see mm-hmm. their belief in God, as they see, their parents aren't perfect anymore?
Mm-hmm.
When you're little, you think mom and dad are superheroes, and now you realize that they're people,
mm-hmm.
like we just mentioned. How have you seen it affect maybe their belief in God or belief in general in faith as if they've seen their parents deal with divorce?
I would say it's you're talking about kind of critical moments. I would say it has the potential to cause kind of a split in the road. You go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You either go kind of relying on it, which is true, I think, probably of most human beings now that I say that, that you rely on your faith and it kind of strengthens it. That kind of crisis moment, you realize that even the most central people in my life, they will fail me at times. And so I need God the Father to be there constantly,
mm-hmm.
and we'll rely on Him more. Whereas I think the flip side of that, especially if it's a family that has where it's been in kind of in the church or in kind of in the Christian community for a long period of time, to have the parents break apart in that and kind of do what seems to be antithetical to Christianity,
mm-hmm.
then the kids can go like, well, this. How does this practically impact me? They're espousing me to do right and to follow.
They're such a hypocrite.
Yeah, exactly.
We hear that so
exactly.
much, don't you?
That's a great way
yeah.
to say it. You're such a hypocrite. So why they become very disillusioned by
right.
it?
Right.
That it doesn't practically impact my world because before I was trying to do all these things and now look what's happening. So I don't understand why I should continue to do this in the future.
Or who are you to tell me that I need to keep doing this because
sure.
you're
right.
not
their
obeying
credibility
it.
Goes down the toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, very much so.
I mean, that's a big part of I think how it affects the faith. What is faithfulness? You start asking those questions because
yeah.
faithfulness is, I mean, all these big picture Christian concepts are
mm-hmm.
modeled for us in loving relationships. We read about them in the Bible, but then we look in our lives for
right.
places where they're happening.
Yeah.
And so this is a place where all of a sudden, faithfulness may not be what it was prior to
mm-hmm.
that. What is love really anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Those things.
What are trust?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Huge questions that they start asking. And then the other thing I was thinking is, along with all that stuff, there's just this utter theological questions start coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, how come God let this happen to
yeah.
me? And
yeah.
they go down that road. And that's a road that's very difficult to deal with because how do we answer those questions? You know, where was God when this thing happened?
Very carefully.
Right. You know, how come God let my parents do this? Mm-hmm. Did God let my, you know, is God good?
Is God really
bad?
In control of
exactly.
all this is happening?
And so I find that the kids who are like the deep thinker types, they do that whole fork in the road. They either move toward God and say, okay, I don't know why this happened, but I'm going to deepen with you. Or they say, God wasn't who I thought he was, and he can't control what I thought he could. Mm-hmm. And now I don't find him to be reliable. And they move into this big place that's kind of calm and in teendom where they, I don't know what I really think about God. Mm-hmm. I hear that so much.
Right. And like that's almost vogue for
It's for totally cool right now. Mm-hmm.
Tell me if I'm wrong, because you guys are, you know, dealing with this in a different capacity than we are, but it's almost like with their parents, it's their parents have kind of gotten to the point, well, I'm not really sure that I think God is all that in control because now I'm giving up on this marriage.
Right.
Or I'm, you know,
and I never planned to get a divorce and blah, blah, blah.
And so why isn't God taking care of me right now kind of a thing?
Yeah.
And then your kids just absorb stuff, so they're hearing that.
Right.
And then they're like, well, I mean, if God can't take care of my parents, then he most certainly probably can't take care of me.
Right.
And that just becomes that trickle-down effect.
I think, you know, when we were young, and I've read this a lot, that we tend to think of God acts like our parents.
Uh-huh.
Because they're a role model.
He's their father figure.
Right.
We have a dad.
If there's a crack there, or they're not reliable, or we realize that our parents are fallen and not perfect, then sometimes that you can make that connection to God, even though that's not a connection. But we do that because that's how our finite minds operate.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that sometimes is a big issue too, because we think that God acts like our parents act.
Right. I mean, I'll speak of, you know, in my practice with adults just as much as teenagers, much more adults, actually. You can spend a lot of time with people recovering from that, the fact that God is called Father and my dad wasn't great.
Right.
And, you know, helping them separate those two, that, yes, you know, the Lord meant for those analogies to lay over one another, but sometimes people deviate from the plan.
Sure.
And we all are sinners.
You know, and on a teenage level, just take divorce out of the way, this is a time in their lives when they're really coming face to face with a lot of new information that, you know, they may be experiencing things for the first time, like such as they know somebody who's dying, you know, like a friend dies, which is different than a grandparent, you know, a car accident happens or something. They begin to see friends from childhood begin to make poor decisions that are leading them down a stray path of promiscuity or, you know, drug and alcohol addiction. And so now they're faced with, like I said, taking divorce aside, they're forced with these really big picture things, which normally they would run to mom and dad and say, what do you think, you know, how do I need to handle this? But now that mom and dad are not a unit and not, you know, even safe in some ways, then they're going to run to other places. Unfortunately, we all have done this, and we run to our teenage friends who have, you know, worlds and mountains of wisdom.
So much.
Absolutely. And so it's so amazing to just, you know, take this concept of just being a teenager and then kind of multiply this of how much worse it becomes decision-making process because you throw in this picture of what divorce is. And so Yeah, it's a terrible thing, and yes, this is hard, but how is leaders, you know, now we're kind of like, all right, well, how do I cope with it? You know, what is okay, we've talked about, you know, these different things of, and I may be stepping on your toes, Jason, just tell me, but in some ways, it's like, these are huge, they're monumental, they're so big, and, you know, typical teenage problems magnified because of this issue of divorce. What are, like, things that we can, you know, tangible things that we can say to
that our leaders can do.
Yeah.
Be there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like we talked about kind of right at the beginning, spending time together, relationships, being that kind listening ear. And being kind of an exploring conversationalist.
Right.
I mean, a little bit like we do as a counselor. You don't necessarily – I don't think they're expecting their leader to have all the answers.
Right.
You know, we are called on in a professional capacity. We're kind of expected to have a lot more answers.
Sure.
But a leader's not necessarily – you know, they just want you to go down the road with them.
Sure.
So conversationally talking through the things and, you know, what – Jason mentioned, you know, emotional regulation, but also labeling.
Sure.
I mean, teenagers usually need a lot of help labeling, and leaders can be really great at that.
That's great.
So they, you know, they see a dynamic happening, just calling it what it is and saying, this is, you know, you feel disillusioned
right.
about the fact that no one's really reliable anymore. You're utterly scared to death. Let's talk about how afraid you are about all these changing dynamics in your life. Labeling for them what is going on can be huge for the teenager because they're not necessarily going to have the categories or the awareness, and you're helping them build that.
Absolutely.
So that's one way, you know, you can serve them.
I think just kind of tagging on to the idea of labeling, it's sometimes a teachable moment of like I said before, it may be a 5-minute conversation. You might ask one question and you are hoping to have a 30-minute conversation, but it ends up being about a 5-minute, I'll answer your question, talk about it.
Right.
And then we're going to move on to something else. And we're going to talk about, you know, the latest movies or clothes or stuff, something. And then the next time you have a conversation, I just bring it up again, that it's a regular conversation.
Seed planting.
And I think what's so crazy is that a lot of times children, students, and even adults who haven't been made aware of how to have a conversation with people. You know, I sometimes giggle with our leaders because they'll say, man, I'm sitting in small group and we chased about 8 rabbits in our small group. You know, we went down this path and this path and this path, and they can't focus on one thing. And we're like, well, of course they can't. They're a teenager. Right. So how are we as adults going to walk through those things with them and say, all right, let me reel you back in. Let's talk about this for a second more, a couple more thoughts on it, and then we'll move on. You know, I think that those are things that with our leaders, especially with the issue of divorce, that you can say, let's take a label, let's put it on this thing, and we'll keep moving. And let's come back. Remember the other day when we were talking about this again and just revisiting?
And sometimes you're sealing up ideas for them. And you've got to remember, you're planting categories of learning for them that they've never had before.
Sure.
So, you know, as you label something and then you close out a little bit of a discussion, even if it's only 5 minutes, they have like a capsule then to walk away with. And you can bank on that they are going to think about it. They're going to talk about it with their friends. They're going to bring it back up with you again. Maybe boys are a little less likely to do that, you know, overtly.
Right.
But they're going to think about it.
They are going to think about
it.
Absolutely. And so you're you know, giving them a little packet to take with them.
Just a reminder, I love the idea you mentioned a minute ago of exploring questions. I love that thought of just framing it that way. Just an encouragement that we're all wired differently. Every student's wired differently. And so it takes a little tact and a little bit of having the radar out to know when you're pushing too much and when you're not and how far. And
you want to watch for their emotional response. I mean, I would say to leaders, remember, you know, I mean, I know, I'm sure Jason thinks about this too, but I really watch the students that are in my office for how much can they handle today. And, you know, we'll take the conversation as far as it looks like they can emotionally bear. And then we're going to pack it up. And the next time they come, we're going to pick that ball up and take it a little farther. But I'm not interested in blowing out the topic so exhaustively and covering every nook and cranny of it for the sake of we have to talk about this. That's not the goal. The goal is manageability.
Sure.
So you're taking the teenager in that moment as far as they can go.
That is a huge piece, I think, for our leaders. Yes, I'm so glad that you just said that, because that manageability is what we're all about in a group dynamic. When you've got 20 kids in your group, you can't have all of the time focus on this one.
No. It's just like there's different stages of grief or different seasons of life. In the same way, I think, dealing with this issue of divorce, there's going to be different seasons where someone walks in or you have a conversation and someone's doing great, and the next time you see them, they're an emotional mess.
Right.
And the next time you see them, they've got it all together again.
There's
just a journey that they're going to go on.
They don't do it in order. They don't do it in a consecutive kind of way.
There's not a 1+1=2 here.
No, it's always
a different equation.
Yeah, and I think the biggest challenge that I see for adults when they're in the midst of all this kind of chaos that we're describing is you want to come in and kind of give them, let's hammer out some truth here. Let's give them an answer. And what that ends up doing is just shuts them down, because you've moved from those exploratory questions and just kind of saying, hey, I'm gonna journey with you through this and kind of explore what's going on and validate your experience with it. And instead of saying, we need to close this out, you need to be able to contain this. So I'm going to give you an answer about what you need to do. And the teenager's like, well, you don't know where I am. I'm gone.
Right. Bye-bye.
That can't be solved.
Right.
You know?
No.
And I don't think anybody wants to be solved.
Absolutely
No, definitely not. Okay, I'm going to throw out a new category in the same vein. It's rigid thinking. Okay. The more successful we are in life, in some ways, the less rigid thinking we have. And sometimes teenagers are looking at these situations, they're wanting to make quick judgments, because quick judgments make us feel comfortable. You know, they're looking to build
control.
That security. Yep, dad was all bad.
Right.
No,
he's
probably
just a bad
not. You know, and so if the leader can help them challenge rigid thinking that they have, they will mature in life and have more success and adaptability with the realities that relationships are complicated. You know, godliness is complicated,
yeah,
truthfully.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, it's not just as simple as you're the most godly person I know, Mom. Well, no, Mom sins too, and she's probably done some things that were sneaky and wrong in this as well.
Right.
And you're going to have to look honestly at that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you only make Mom good and Dad bad, that alliance stuff is going to get going, and that's going to be a problem. So if leaders can help them, just, you know, gently challenging that.
Yeah, and gently is a good word, because I've realized with students I've dealt with that the rigid thinking usually is a reflection of either a parent.
They've learned it.
An influence in their life. And so when you're pushing on that, you're not just pushing them, you're pushing Mom or Dad or a friend or someone that has planted that seed in their mind that this is what is true.
Or even we're asking questions, and the questions that we're asking is, whose fault was it?
Mm-hmm.
Who caused the divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Who's, you know, and we're not we're trying to find out information, but in some ways when we ask the question of, well, who filed for divorce, it's almost like you're casting the blame.
And it's
way
more complicated than that.
Right,
oh,
right.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's so much manipulation that occurs amongst the spouses as they're trying to work these things out.
Sure.
I think if you can encourage them I use this phrase all the time that I think my kids get sick of hearing me say, live in the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of feeling the pull to kind of rigid think and say, I've figured it out, I know who's at fault here, to live in the tension of that allows them to come out of it with a more whole experience versus I know who was wrong. And then, you know, 10 years down the road, they're having to pick up the pieces of a severed relationship with one or the other because they didn't.
Absolutely. And, you know, along with that rigid thinking is the reality that certain personality types, like if you have a kid who's anxious, and, you know, leaders are probably going to have a little bit of a sense of if their kid in their group is more anxious. Anxious people love rigid thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have to have it because it's part of how they structure their world.
Mm-hmm. So it gives them answers.
Exactly. It does. It gives them – it's just part of the security building because a lot of the world is not secure for them. And so that's a good thing to bear in mind. You know, what's the demeanor of that kid, because that's going to affect what kinds of things they lean towards.
Sure.
Well, as we land the plane on this discussion, what are some I love that analogy. I use it.
You do it. I use that all the time.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Anywho, so as we kind of wind up, what are some practical things that you would say to leaders, some encouragement or any last thoughts you have is a leader maybe sitting in the car, sitting at home or on their computer thinking about, and they have maybe a specific student they're praying for, dealing with, what are some encouraging words you could give them? We definitely painted a picture of some of the struggle, but let's land on some hope. So what are some encouraging things we could say to help them as they walk through this with their students?
I think the relationship piece of it is the core in my mind. It is absolutely vital. And if you can focus on that and do that well, then you definitely reap the benefits from it. So from my perspective, if you're doing life together and seeing them grow over time and can experience that with them and walk through that journey with them, I think that's where the richness of being a leader with students is so powerful. But if done well, I think you can really do that. We're talking about it from, you know, 12 different angles, and so I think it begin to feel very complicated. It's really not that complicated.
No.
It's just sticking in life with somebody. I mean, everybody has experiences where you've done that. It's a little bit unique in terms of dealing with teenagers. You were talking about they take 8 different rabbit trails, and so, you know, my mind's going in 8 different directions. How am I going to do that? But you can do that. Just stick in the fight with them. As you get to know them, then it's easier to follow where their thoughts are going.
Mm.
And then, again, like I said, I think no matter the stress, no matter the issue, in terms of their faith developing, in terms of their own personal growth and relationship developing, that you come out the end of that really, really, really feel like you've done something pretty powerful and enriching a person's life, more so than probably in some ways than I think you can any other time of a person's life, because it's such a time of transition while they're a teenager.
Sure.
And they're looking – they have lost stability points in their life. So a leader can kind of become a parent replacement figure. And, you know, that's scary and profoundly wonderful at the same time.
Yeah.
So in whatever measure, that leader can be, you know, reliable, consistent, available, asking those open-ended questions, you know, being willing to, like you were saying, live in the tension, being okay with the fact that they don't have all the answers yet either, that lets the teenager follow that model.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else becomes reliable again. It starts to reshape their picture of the world, and it just gives them another person to consider as trustworthy, reliable, and godly.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, that may be
huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be the only person in their world that's doing that, aside from one or two friends. A lot of times, you know, they may cling to somebody else who's got their, you know, spiritual act together, so to speak. But it's really big to have an older person. And, you know, leaders, depending on their age, you know, some are more cool than others to a teenager, you know. And so the fact that they're giving you value by time is huge to a teenager.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. One of the things I was thinking about in coming here today was the people that I see who are adults who will walk through these horrible, horrible histories. And to look at their life now, sure, they have some struggles, but it's not near what you would think it would have been. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is because of those key people outside of their parents in their lives who were able to be and do life with them, live in the tension of it, give them some direction, give them some answers at times, but mostly just kind of be with them.
Yeah.
That it provided such grounding and such kind of strengthening in terms of their ego, I mean, their identity. So when they came out of it, they had some direction in life. They didn't just flounder. I think that's unbelievably
It's not that all people
powerful.
Are bad or unreliable.
Right,
you know,
right.
There are some out there. And I actually have this friend, you know, if one of their leaders, chances are many of your leaders have been through their parents getting a divorce, knowing the societal statistics that there are out there today.
Right.
So they're going to have wisdom. And they're going to have wisdom about the things that they've been through, sharing that, but not, you know, losing track on, don't just talk about yourself.
Right. Well, there's no right or wrong answer here.
There's not.
Because you're talking about life.
And
you've experienced
one person's parents did a different thing than somebody else's, and there's different factors. Mm-hmm. And
it's nice to be able to tell leaders, here is some suggestions, but there is no formula.
Right.
Right. And just the simple fact that you're with them is huge.
Right.
Well, this is great stuff. This is very helpful.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
And thanks for having us.
You know, as we close out, we're thinking about, you know, chances are there's a leader listening to this that might even be dealing with this with a student right now, or in the next 6, 9, 12 months is going to have a student call or show up a group and say something and just say, you know, and they think through, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle this? Mm-hmm. Hopefully there'll be some great stuff on this that'll help them think through and process that process.
Process that. Good job. Yeah.
I was processing that. Hey, Sarah, would you mind just for a moment, as we think about those leaders and those students, would you close us in prayer?
Sure.
And pray for those leaders and students and wisdom that as they walk through that season in their life.
Yeah. Father, we thank you so much for just the way that you continually love us, that you don't give up on us, that you constantly meet us exactly where we're at. You pick us up and you take us to the next place. Father, so many times you are giving us exactly what we need in the moment, and sometimes we're not able to see that. And I pray that these leaders, as they're walking through life with their students, Lord, that they're spending time with you, that they are learning to love you on their own. And in that process, that they would be able to pour out your love into these students' lives. Lord, we all know that we need you desperately. And I pray that these students would, as they're clamoring for some kind of a foothold and some kind of reason or explanation to the tough times that they're going through, I pray that you would use these leaders to just step in to kind of fill that gap and help them connect with their Heavenly Father. Lord, we just thank you so much for the opportunity to sit here today. And we know that it is in your amazing and holy name that we have life. Amen.